Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here remotely with Martin. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm actually sitting in San Jose at the offices of Weka.io with Liran Zwibel, if I get that correct.
Just right.
Excellent. Who's CEO of Weka. Liran, why don't you just introduce yourself and then we'll tell everybody why we're here today.
So I'm Liran Zwibel. I'm the CEO, co-founder of Weka.io. I have a lot of storage experience. We started Weka.io in 13, but actually prior to that, I was doing XAV, which was a block storage startup that IBM acquired in 07. Now it's the Spectrum Accelerate.
Wonderful. Thank you. So the reason we're here today is we met last year at reInvent, and it was very interesting to have a chance to chat. And we thought it'd be very good for you to take us through what the company does, what the product is, and how you're different, because you're using things like NVMe and you're doing all sorts of other interesting things. So perhaps we can start by talking about the concept of what your product is and why it's needed, because I believe what you're selling is a high-performance distributed file system.
Indeed.
So why do we even need those in the first place? And Martin, you can chip in on this, because this is an area where you've got some obvious background.
Yeah, I've been doing it for about 20 years, so I think so.
Right. So at Weka.io, what we did, we realized, hey, the media has changed tremendously with NVMe, and also the network has changed tremendously with 100 gig Ethernet or EDR InfiniBand, and both are way, way faster than what they used to be 10, 15 years ago. Another thing that we've realized is, hey, no one has created a new parallel file system for well over 20 years, and previous ones were created for different technologies. So what we did, we created the world's fastest file system, which is a parallel file system for NVMe over fabrics. The other thing we've realized is, hey, with the vast amount of capacity that organizations now store, you cannot store everything on NVMe. So we also introduced tiering to our product. So you can put your working set on the world's fastest NVMe over fabrics parallel file system, but then store the vast amount of capacity on hard drives that either we manage or are stored on your object storage platform.
So, guys, why are distributed file systems hard? Martin?
Why are they hard? Because they're distributed, Chris. So managing consistency across a number of nodes and how you might want to... And parallel access is hard. So parallel access, so I assume you're allowing many nodes accessing the same data at the same time. So you've got locking problems, consistency problems, all kinds of availability issues, split brains. So yeah, they're hard things. So for distributed file systems I'm most familiar with is GPFS, which is now Spectrum Scale, and Quantum, and some of the open source ones. But the two big ones are GPFS and Quantum StoreNext. So how do you differ? How are you similar?
So we are different in two big changes. One change is that the traditional parallel file systems only parallelized the I/O, but they kept the metadata mostly confined to a small amount of controllers. We are also parallelizing and scaling out the metadata. So you can have as many 4K IOs as you want through as many files as you want. You can have trillions of files in the namespace. Directories can have billions of files in them, and they work as well as a directory with 1,000 files. So obviously listing them will take longer, but linearly longer to how other directories work well. So this is one big difference. Another big difference is that we are parallelizing over NVMe devices where their native block size is 4K. So when you have small files, it still works extremely well. And actually, when you have larger files and larger IOs, we actually get more devices part of each IO than the other solutions. And even if you have 256K IO, we break it into multiple devices and get the latencies very low.
Let's just take a step back a second. We talked about the idea of why file systems are hard, but what's actually the biggest underlying requirement for those technologies? Is it low latency? Is it high throughput? Is it high parallelism? Is it all of those together? You know, what is it that people are looking for out of these file systems these days?
So I would be looking for low latency for some workloads, high ops, high parallelism, scale out, and certainly within media, that has always been introduced with the distributed file systems, certainly parallel ones, around mixing file sizes. We tend to deal with a lot of mixed file sizes as well. So I'm very interested to see how Weka can handle the mix, because sometimes you find yourself tuning a file system for small files or large files, for sequential, for random. And if you're rendering or doing something like that, you may have a very mixed workload.
Okay, so let's move on and actually talk about that and get into the product detail. Now, the product is called Matrix.
Indeed.
And it's delivered as a software product, yet you ship it with hardware, I suspect, with certain partners. Why don't you just give us that overview of what it looks like and how people would, you know, the look and feel of it.
All right, so we're a software vendor, but we create storage products. So our technology is driven through software, but obviously people have to consume it with servers. We either run on-premises, and we already have agreements with Hewlett Packard Enterprise, Penguin Computer, Supermicro. We're going to announce other partnerships soon. So we'll cover most of the hardware vendors that people like working with. And then we also can run on the public cloud. So we are on the AWS marketplace.
Okay. So it's a hardware appliance, scale out hardware appliance?
Yes.
With NVMe, exclusively NVMe?
So you have two kind of servers. One kind of server is NVMe only. And then if you want to tier two hard drives, basically what you're going to do, you will need a third-party object storage solution that can sit on-prem or in the cloud.
Okay.
Or many vendors have servers that have NVMe and hard drives, or an NVMe server connected to a JBOD. And in that case, we can take over the hard drives and actually create the capacity tiers our own.
And did you go down the route of NVMe purely because you saw that as an opportunity to do high performance, high parallelism, high scale? Is it a case that you couldn't have done that with traditional SSDs like SATA drives or SAS drives? Was it specifically NVMe you needed to do that with?
Yes. And the reason is to provide our very low latency, and for 4K IOs with 100 gig Ethernet or EDR InfiniBand, you can get about 150 microseconds. If you want to provide that kind of latency, you cannot actually go through the Linux kernel if you want consistency. We've implemented our own real-time operating system that leverages Intel virtualization techniques to run alongside Linux. For our operating system to take over full devices, they had to be PCI devices, and NVMe fits the bill great. So if you were to run LSPCI, you will actually see that the NVMe devices are on the platform. But if you were to run LSPLK, Linux won't see them. So we take over the NVMe devices and we manage them completely through our own IO stack.
Okay, got it. Martin, anything to add on that?
No, I'm interested in listening to the whole architectural discussion. I've got some questions about how it's deployed going forward and obviously how it works in, because you talk about Linux. What are the options for multi-operating system, that whole side of things as well?
We natively run on Linux, where we have our own native file system driver that offers great performance. If you have a 100 gigabit link, it offers up to 11 gigabytes per second running over smallish files of 256K files. Obviously, larger files will have similar throughput. Smaller files may have slightly lower one. And this is thanks to our ability to aggregate a lot of low latency operations. If you look at what a local file system can do, local file system over NVMe is limited at about 3 and 3.5 gigabytes per second. So we're about three times what the local file system over NVMe can do. Or if you look over local file system over SATA, it's about five times as fast. And obviously, it's more than 10 times faster than NFS. Since Linux is not the only operating system, we also support NFS and SMB. And this summer, we bring in support to S3. So we'll get you S3 access to the objects, very low latency compared to Memcached or Redis over the same data, and HDFS. So you could run your Hadoop workloads over the same data, so you don't need to copy to the open source triple replicating Hadoop solutions.
That's really good news. That's excellent. I mean, that's always been the weakness with some of the other file systems.
What, the lack of HDFS, Martin?
Oh, no, the lack of extra protocols, or the fact that you bolt them on yourself.
And are these native? I take it these are natively within your solution?
Yes.
Yep.
And you implied that S3 and file protocols can get to the same data. Can they get to the same data at the same time?
They can get to the same data in the same time. Obviously, there are semantics that you have to bridge. You know, usually with the object storage solutions, you assume that that objects are unmodifiable, so two gets will always get you the same data. With us, if you change a file, you do a get again, you will get different data. So what we'll be doing will actually let you name a file as a permalink to an object with that version of the data, because we also have snapshots. Okay. So we can leverage snapshots to make sure, hey, if you're getting the same special path, it's a different one than the actual file path, you will always get the same data. Yeah, if that's important for your application. Mentioning snapshots, we have the snapshots are same performance as without snapshots because our writes are redirect and write. So there is no difference in overhead whether there is or isn't a snapshot. You can just take them while IOs are running. This is a huge difference than traditional distributed file system that usually mandated that you cannot have IOs running to take a snapshot or that performance while snapshot decreased a lot. Another very cool feature we have with tiering to object storage and snapshot, we have what we call snap to object, which we can actually store all of that snapshot in the object storage in a way that doesn't need the original cluster anymore. So any other WebIO cluster accessing the same object storage can continue running from that point in time and then take another snapshot there, only push the deltas, and the original cluster can view the changes in the namespace.
Okay, so you're saying that those snapshots are effectively self-referencing in that sense. Is that right?
If you push them to an object storage, right. They are.
Okay, so you could use that as a way to move your data around potentially if you really wanted to, or is that...
Yep, so it gets you backup because just snapshot on the same system, it's not backup because it's not on a third-party data. But if you take a snapshot, push it to an object storage, I think real storage people will still call it a backup. DR, HA, so it gets you a lot stronger abilities to treat your data than traditional file systems.
I would treat it as a backup if it's been pushed to a secondary storage in another location.
Right.
And yeah, fair enough, of course. If it's within the same hardware, no, that's not a backup. But yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So is there anything else that we've not covered that we should cover that's architecturally unique about the platform that you want to make sure we don't forget?
So referencing Martin's questions, we publish our results for 4K files. The unique thing about us is the ability to aggregate a lot of very low latency operations into high throughput. So we actually don't have the problems of traditional solutions where they only worked well for the large files. And if you have tons of small files, you had to restripe them or do something else. One major thing we didn't describe was protection. We protect either +2 or +4. And depending on how many failure domains you have, you can actually decide how wide it is. So from 3+2 to 16+2 or 3+4.
So we're talking about erasure coding there as a technique, is it? Or is it not erasure coding?
It feels like erasure coding, but erasure coding doesn't carry our performance. Okay. So you wouldn't do erasure coding and get 4K write in 150 microseconds. So the math is different.
Okay. You're not going to tell us how it's different, or is that... Is that an IP type thing that you don't want to
go into detail? It's an IP type thing. Another very big difference between us and erasure coding is that each write actually picks its own stripe. And then it allows us to distribute load across the cluster in the perfect way, but also make sure that rebuilds happen extremely fast. So if you have 100 failure domains and you're protecting 16+2, each write will pick its own 18 servers. Then the 18 servers are picked based on load or based on better redistributing the data. Now, if a server goes down, you have 99 other servers that shares stripes with them. They rebuild among themselves, very high throughput. A second server goes down. The remaining 98 servers will find all the stripes that belong to these two servers, rebuild them first. This usually is done within seconds or a minute.
Right.
And now you're back to, you're not at risk.
It sounds to me like that's a bit of an XIV-ish type architecture there. Without claiming that there's any sort of influence there, it does sound like there's a heritage, shall we call it, from looking at the XIV design and maybe bringing it into a more modern...
Indeed. XIV was basically mirroring 1+1 that actually put a limit on scaling. So we took the same ideas of the XIV's rebuild, coupled it with much more advanced mathematics, and we're able to come up with a way to store a thing in something that looks like erasure coding, but doesn't have the downsides of erasure coding. So we have the upsides of the XIV-like rebuilds, and we don't have the downsides of erasure coding.
What's a minimum configuration in that instance then? You know, what are customers typically deploying as a minimum viable sort of deployment of the infrastructure?
So we really like these 2U4 servers machine. HP has the Apollo 2000s with 69 NVMEs. Supermicro has their big twins with 24 NVMEs. And then if you just use two of these, you have 8 servers and you can start with 5+2. If you like 1U servers, you can start with 6 and protect 3+2.
Okay.
Obviously, the more servers you add, you get a wider stripe and you get better write performance because the protection overhead is smaller and you also get better utilization of your NVMe devices.
So drawing a graph then, would I be able to say that write performance doesn't increase linearly, it gets better than linear?
It gets better than linear,
okay,
up to about 20 servers. From 20 servers to many thousands of servers, it continues to grow linearly.
Okay.
So when you talk about many thousands of servers, how many thousands of servers will Weka IO Matrix actually go to?
Up to 64,000, where we scale data and metadata over them. We've only tested up until 5,000 actual systems,
okay,
but the architecture should grow into exascale. So,
can we talk quickly about the cloud implementation? Because clearly, if you deploy this as a hardware solution where you've taken that hardware yourself, then you can control the architecture a lot more than you can do if it's in the cloud. How does the cloud implementation work?
So we support AWS, and we actually work very closely with AWS. So on their new i3 instances, we run fully accelerated, similarly to how we run on-prem with NVMe and Fast Ethernet or InfiniBand. And they have more layers that the packets go through. But if in on-prem, we're doing 4K IOs in about 150 microseconds, on AWS i3 instances, we're doing 4K IOs to applications in about 170 microseconds. This is faster than other on-prem storage, even block-based storage.
So does that mean for that instance that there's EBS connected to it?
No. We use the local NVMe devices on the i3s.
Right, okay. That's not a dedicated hardware instance, is it? Or is it a...
So it's your decision. You can run us either as dedicated hardware, and then you don't use the other cores on the i3 instances, or you can use us in a converged mode where you can actually run applications on the cores that you didn't give us.
Obviously, performance is one of your major focuses. Have you run anything against spec or any of those sort of benchmarks that show what performance people can expect?
Yes. So we've recently submitted spec SFS software build 2014. This is the currently most challenging benchmark for a file system. We've run it over 4 Supermicro Big Twins, so basically 16 servers, and we've reached a result of 1,200 concurrent builds. There are many other submissions, but the other close to are either NetApp, and they've used their biggest clustered on top with NVMe flash cache, and they reached a bit over 500. So we did more than twice the NetApp. And then there is an IBM GPFS V5 or Spectrum Scale, as you said, actually running over NVMe of a Fabrics block. So the GPFS was running over NVMe of a Fabrics block with a lot more processing power and RAM, and they've reached 600. Both the NetApp and the GPFS were at higher latencies, and also GPFS ran about a third of their workload out of RAM on the client.
That sounds plausible. I mean, you do end up running quite a lot of your workload out of RAM with GPFS if you have enough.
Actually, we were asked by some customers why we don't show out of RAM, because we also support write cache and writing back. Actually, also in the summer, we're going to come up with a mode that you could even untar, which will end up being in the write cache and will have almost local to a local file system performance. So you probably know that when you untar on a local file system or on a shared file system, there is a huge difference. Or if you are doing a Git clone, we will come up with a mode that will get you local file system performance for us and only then write it back. We just don't think that's a mode that makes sense for primary storage benchmarks. So is the one thing you do to make practical sense at customers' environments. And there is another thing that you do when you're actually benchmarking primary storage that needs to be resilient to losses.
Okay.
Okay. So let's move on and talk about deployment models. So if a customer wants to take this, you know, are they running an entire storage cluster? Can they run like a hyperconverged environment? How are they typically deploying it?
So when we started the company, we actually assumed the converged mode will be the most popular one. Because it's the most efficient way to run. You're basically saving the cost of all the storage servers, which don't come cheap. So they do cost quite a lot of money when we look at the overall solutions. But what we've learned is that that's not how most customers see it. So the fact that running converged storage on the application servers is more efficient and you get similar performance, maybe even better if you consider that you have more failure domains and better writes. Customers like to know where their storage sits. They want to go and they have the specific storage servers that they can touch. So basically, there's this whole momentum of moving applications and infrastructures from pets to herd. You probably have heard these terms before.
Yep.
And we thought customers would be happy to also move storage to a herd. But it looks like that they still like to see storage more like pets. Also, in many cases, the buying cycles are different. So if they bought the compute 1 year, they want to buy the storage the following year, then the hardware that they bought for the compute isn't optimized to run storage.
True. I suppose from your perspective, Martin, you still maintain storage as a pet, as a thing that you manage separately, I guess.
Well, yes, data is treated as a pet. Data is the most important thing you have. So yeah, we're not at that stage where we're going to treat it as a cattle or as a herd. So yeah, that's completely right about the buying cycle. Storage and compute tend to be slightly disconnected on the buying cycle. We're not yet at a stage of buying storage and compute hyperconverged, apart from some VMware instances where you're running vSAN. I suppose as people become more confident and more comfortable with things like vSAN, we may see those buying cycles start to converge a bit more.
The reason our vision is towards a herd or a cattle is that when you are tiering to an object storage, when you have the ability to offset all your data with snap to object, then where the data actually sits or the ability to immediately recover your data becomes a lot stronger and you actually have the ability, we think, to look at it as such. But the fact that we provide the technical ability to do it doesn't necessarily mean that the customers are willing to take that leap of faith and do it for their projects.
Yeah, storage teams tend to be rather more conservative than compute teams, because if you lose your data, you lose your business.
Right. As I said, we actually prove our customers that with snap to object, they can have their data on several different platforms and they very easy for them to even create a very small cluster and try to recover, see the file systems. I think it will just take a bit more time for people to get comfortable with it.
Yeah, don't disagree. It's, as I say, we tend to be a conservative bunch. We'll let somebody try it first, and if they don't have problems, we'll give it a go.
Yeah, it's always good to let somebody else take the bleeding edge and take the hit and take the failure and then come along afterwards, I always think. Let's just quickly, as we're starting to get towards the end here and winding up, let's quickly just talk about the consumption model. So how you license it, who you're selling it through. You know, I believe people like HPE are resellers at the moment. You know, so what's the licensing model and how can people actually consume it? And obviously we know public cloud is one of those.
Right. So on the public cloud, we're just on the AWS marketplace. So if you need high performance file system on AWS, you can go to the marketplace. You can search for Wakaio, you'll find us, or you can go to start.wakaio.io and we'll let you start from there. And you get basically a CloudFormation template that you can launch. You can connect it to your instances, and then it's easy peasy.
And is that like a minimum thing? Is it per hour? Is, you know, somebody wants to try it out for a week, can they do that? Or so, are you expecting longer commitment?
So on AWS, first month comes for free.
Okay.
And from that moment on, we're an overhead over the instance. So you're paying the instances an hourly rate. And if they run WAC-IO, that rate is slightly higher.
Okay.
That's what happens on the cloud. On-premises, as I said, we have the very large OEM resellers, HPE, Supermicro, Penguin. Then they can sell the WAC-IO software. We have the price for the hot tier, and then we have a way much more reduced price for the tiered. So either our own hard drives or the object storage solution. And then you're paying on an annual license. And that license basically buys you the right for upgrades. Mm-hmm. And we still are adding quite a lot of functionality each large release. So, and we for the foreseeable future, we'll continue to do it. It also provides support and maintenance services.
Okay.
We've talked about AWS as a deployment target a number of times. Have we got any plans for the other big public clouds, or is it just going to be Amazon for a foreseeable future?
Obviously, there are two other clouds. I can name them, Azure and GCP. We're not ready to announce anything with them, but as you can know, I can very easily name them.
Yeah.
Obviously, we will end up announcing news around them as well.
Okay. Well, that was a great introduction to the technology. And I think if people want to find more, I guess they can go onto your website and they can dig down. Where can, first of all, they find more about the company? And secondly, if you're on Twitter, where can they follow you and learn more about what you're working on?
All right. So on Twitter, I'm at Liran Zwiebel. So just my name. You can also go to @WAC-IO on Twitter. And if you go to our site, www.waka.io, you're going to see quite a lot of resources about the company.
Wonderful. Okay, that's great. Thanks for joining us. If you want to follow up on this, we'll put the details of all those connections and links and various things you've talked about in the show notes. But otherwise, you can always find us online at storageunpacked.com, at Storage Unpacked on Twitter, or on LinkedIn. You can search for Storage Unpacked and you can find us as a LinkedIn group. Thanks for your time, Liran, and thanks, Martin. Talk to everybody soon.